Chapter 1, House Judiciary is in session. In attendance, Representative Holmes, Representative Samuels, Representative Ramos, Representative Coghill. With an excused absence is Representative Lynn. Our prayers go out to Bob Lynn, to Mrs. Lynn, our friend Representative Grunberg, and Mrs. Grunberg, and a welcome, a professional welcome to our colleague, Representative Dugan, who, by action of the committee and committees this morning, has assumed that seat until Representative Grunberg is well enough to return. We have a busy calendar today. The first piece of business I'd like to bring to the members' attention is somewhere on your crowded desk you will see a House Judiciary Committee bill that we intend to have read across the next session and amended a Judiciary Committee bill. The greatest vocational rehab program I know in the United States is the U.S. Army and other armed services. Right now, if a person, if a minor who has been convicted of minor consuming or other various crimes is on probation under the age of 21, he cannot be taken by the U.S. Army because the state of Alaska still has a thumb on that young person. So in essence, what this would do is release the minor from probationary status as they try to better and right their lives. And it seems appropriate. We've been working with General Campbell, and we are anxious to introduce this and thought to make it a Judiciary Committee bill rather than a personal bill of the chair. So we're going to have that read across shortly. With that, today we hope to take up three items in this order, HJR 28, and then House Bill 268, and then finally Representative Newman's House Bill 303. In attendance today are friends Representative Newman, Representative Stoltz. I saw Representative Gatto a little while ago. We're delighted to have everybody. And with that, we want to take up the business before us, which is House Joint Resolution number 28. Representative Dahlstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would move the CS for House Joint Resolution number 28, version M.
I'll object for discussion.
Thank you. Representative Holmes objects. We have before us version M. Representative Samuels.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We made all the provisions that the committee had discussed over the last couple meetings. The fund is out of the CBR now. It is a separate fund. The statutory site remained out. Instead of a description of the progressivity money is in there. A language description is in rather than statutory site. What I call the sunset provision, which I think a lot of people didn't like me calling it that, but the constitutional imperative that the money keep going in after 2014 is out. We still have the ability to put money in if we so choose.
I feel like I'm 4.5% of the way there.
We rolled, we changed the amount to 5%. We put a rolling average in, and some of the language you'll see on page 2 is the phasing in of the rolling average. It's not as complicated as it might look, right? You had to phase it in over time. And we held the money where you could not have a payout for, I believe, 5 years from now. And I appreciate Jerry Burnett at the Department of Revenue. I don't think he could make it today, and I told him that was fine with me. He asked if he'd be needed. I didn't think so. He did come up with this, and I want to make sure that these are pretty just general amounts, you know, with basic rates of return and a basic payout. And you can see there what the beginning balance would be at a certain projected price and a certain projected volume, and what the payout at 5% would be. So with that, I think we've talked about this quite a bit, and I'm realizing it's still a fluid process as we go through the system and if other ideas come in. I did get quite a few suggestions on a name. The best one came from Representative Dahlstrom's staff, Kelly, that was the Save Our Oil Surplus Fund, the Alaska SOS Fund, which was good. Some of the suggestions I can't repeat in mixed company, which...
Thank you.
So I had quite a few other names for it. I chose not to put one in there yet. In the next committee, we might do that. But I think all of the Oh, here, I'll see. You know, here we go.
Till I get some more copies.
Look at the last one.
Nice. Representative Dugan?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. At the last committee discussion of this bill, when I was still merely a lowly member of the audience, I heard Representative Samuels lament about not having what he thought was a catchy enough name for this. So I've offered a few suggestions here. And they are, just for the members of the audience, these are all acronyms, of course. This one would be SUPER, which would be Saving Upside Petroleum Extraction Revenues. COOL, which is Capturing Our Oil Largesse. And I have to say my favorite is RALF, Retaining Alaska's Large Petroleum Share, and it has to be the H that's capitalized.
And I would tell you, Representative Dugan, that given the chair that you're in, it would be appropriate for you to offer this as an amendment.
Mr. Chairman, but only if it were a conceptual amendment.
All right. Representative Dahlstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Samuels, can you address for the committee and the members who are here, my concerns, which were stated last time, that there was nowhere in this amendment, which would become the bill, that would release the state from the responsibility to pay back the CBR. Can you tell me where that is,
yes,
please?
Representative Dahlstrom, Mr. Chairman, this adds a new section to the Constitution. So it doesn't, it is completely silent on there. It could be a complete different subject. It could be on victims' rights. It could be anything. It's a new section to the Constitution for this and has no bearing on the repayment provision of a different section of the Constitution.
Representative Dahlstrom?
Mr. Chair, is Tam Cook online?
I don't know that we have anybody from the Department of Law. Can you direct us, Representative Samuels, to the...
It's not in there because it's...
Right.
Because if it were in there, it would be referring to something which it doesn't refer to. So it's...
And you gave, through the chair, you gave a very good explanation. Just for my edification, I want to make sure that... It's just not some little something.
No. Representative Cargill.
I like the idea, but I still am reluctant to putting something in the Constitution that has a start and stop. And so I understand. I'm going to ponder that, but I'm not going to keep it in committee yet. But I think before I vote on the floor, I'm going to ponder that a little bit.
And, of course, just for the record, as you know, that the fear was, as the production continues to decline, the windfall profits or the progressivity money will be needed to pay the day-to-day bills as opposed to you and the... We could find ourselves in a situation where we're putting money into a savings account when we would much rather have it in a checking account. Yeah. And we just don't know when that time will be. You can kind of look at production curves and figure for 5 years we're
and just
probably safe right now.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, sir.
I fully will appreciate that. And I would hope that our statutes were stable enough to do that. I understand the reason to go up into the Constitution. But once we do that, it's a whole different case law dynamic. And plus, just putting things in the Constitution always, even though I have advocated a few times, it's still a high hurdle to me. So I'll be watching that and I'll ponder a little bit.
If I could respond to that also. My view is if we didn't go into the Constitution, if we did just a statutory fund, we appropriated the money, the education fund, or indeed you stopped it from the sweep, and you can do whatever it is you wanted to do. Eventually, if the legislature has a choice between talking about a revenue stream and just gutting that account and spending all the money, the future legislature, will gut the account and spend all the money, and the money will be gone. So I'm trying to save a little piece while we can to save us from ourselves.
And Mr. Chairman? If I might respond.
I was pondering that is, in fact, the best name of all. The Save Us From Ourselves is really best frames this bill. Representative Coghill.
Mr. Chairman, I might even take some exception to that. I would, that's one possibility, but that might be assuming a little more than I'm willing to assume. Looking back in history, Alaska legislature has been very good at managing savings. I think our permanent fund right now is a good example of that. So I understand there's one side to that story, but there may be some very well other side to that. And so but I think we should get this into a vote before I talk myself into
okay.
it.
Representative Holmes?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think I understand this, but I was just wondering if the bill sponsor could just, I'm looking at page 2, line 8. You could just walk me through that the payouts are going to be, all right, beginning, I'll just read it, line 6 through line 8. Beginning on July 1st, 2013, and on July 1st of each year thereafter, an amount equal to 5% of the average of the fiscal year on market values of the production tax revenue fund for the first 5 of the preceding 6 fiscal years shall be transferred. Is that, I'm trying to work this through in my head, is that so that you already know what those numbers are when the legislature is appropriating because you don't want to include the amount on the year you're ending? I'm trying to figure out why it's the 5 of the last, the first 5.
First 5 of the last 6, so you're not in the middle of a year guessing. You will have firm numbers okay. on the first 5 of the last 6, and everything else is phasing into that.
And Mr. Chairman, if I may, that's kind of standard, I assume, for this type of fund?
That is correct. Okay. I believe that language either came out of other legislation or came out of current statute on I don't know where Tam got it, but I know that I've read it before on other things that go to a percent of market value methodology.
Okay. Thank you.
I suspect that that we now have a clean piece of legislation before us that can be argued and is going to be massaged as it churns through the building. But I'm at least satisfied with the work product that we have before us. Do you maintain your objection?
If there are no other questions, I'm willing to remove my
The objection has been withdrawn. Representative Dahlstrom?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd move the CS for House Joint Resolution number 28, version M, with the individual recommendation.
I think there is a fiscal note attached.
Constitutional amendment.
I apologize, Mr. Chair, and any and all attached fiscal notes.
Thank you. Seeing no objection, CS for House Joint Resolution number 28 will pass from committee. Next before us is House Bill 268. Representative Stoltz. Ben Mulligan. Representative Stoltz. Dr. Sister.
Thank you, Honorable Chairman Ramirez. I am Bill Stoltz. I represent House District 16, which comprises the communities of Chugiak, Butte Lazy Mountain, Fairview Loop, and Springer Loop. And the issue brought before us, bringing before you today, is very important to the Butte portion of my legislative district. And after listening to today's speech and the reflections of Justice Fabe and her remembrances of Justice Stewart, I am very honored to be with a group of distinguished legislators who take such a thoughtful approach and adhering to the constitutional principles of our government. I appreciate that approach being applied to my bill. I look forward to this bill moving quickly, but any questions you posit that may slow the advancement, I certainly want them addressed in the committee. This is an issue that was brought before me. It's changed to our criminal law section. It's precipitated by Mr. Chairman.
Sorry. Thank you. I just want to ask a quick question. Representative Samuels and I chaired the Resource Committee a couple of years together. It was a beautiful time for us. and we did one of the bills that we did was the Mat-Su Public Rec Area. What was that called? The CNIC?
Mr. Chairman, the CNIC Public Use Area, multiple use area, and passed unanimously by both bodies of the legislature in 2004.
Yes, and my question was, I recollect that there was a great deal of lawlessness out there, and amongst those things were people that were lighting automobiles on fire, abandoned automobiles. Is that accurate?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, that is accurate. We've turned the corner on some of that, but certainly one of the one of the continuing hazards, and it's not just a blight, but certainly a public safety hazard to the community through fire danger and to risk of life to our very diligent volunteer fire responders. So that's a continuing problem. We have made enforcement advances, and just the general, almost the former mayor of New York's broken windows theory, just taking care of little things. Some of the things have taken care of themselves, but it's a process requiring continued vigilance and some tweaking as this bill comes before you in that manner.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. Go ahead.
And thank you, Mr. Chairman, for the opportunity to fill in that historical perspective that I probably would have should have provided just for some of the newer folks. It's a pretty simple proposal here. It's to increase the penalties, although some reticence that I seek to add a new felony, and caution, because that's a serious endeavor. But the seriousness of the offense is, I think, warrants it, and hopefully it will be more of a deterrence than actually an application of penalty for folks that do put the community at and the surrounding areas at risk, as well as public safety officials. This is an issue that I didn't just introduce carelessly or with cavalierly. It's the issue was brought before me. We ran it, vetted it through community, through the various administration of law agencies of the state of Alaska, and asked for their review and comments. And public safety, in particular, at all levels, was very active in providing language suggestions, which were taken and vetted through community leaders as well. If this is the approach that they were seeking, and in conjunction with going through all the administration of law agencies, and that's yielded this bill. So it's important to my area. It's probably one I hear about more than any other issue. I spend a disproportionate amount of my legislative time on issues relating to this Kinnick public use area, and it's a disproportionate amount of time I happily spend, because it's an area important not only to the residents but to recreational users. We want to continue to make it safer for the families who have historically recreated in that area, and where the process of the Kinnick public use area is ongoing with a lot of public participation, but this is one area that can't be resolved within the regulatory process.
Representative Stoltz, the bill says a motor vehicle. Do you draw a distinction between a working motor vehicle or an abandoned motor vehicle?
You know, Mr. Chairman, I was just looking at that one, and I'd like some help from my staff on that one, because I wanted to clarify that before I got here in my...
Understand. Representative Holmes?
Oh, unless they are prepared to answer your question.
For the record, my name is Ben Mulligan, staff to Representative Stoltz. We used a motor vehicle because oftentimes the vehicle isn't abandoned. I mean, someone could go park their vehicle for the weekend for a trip and come back and find their vehicle burned. So it may not always be an abandoned vehicle.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Holmes and Samuels.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Stoltz, I appreciate this bill. I'm very sympathetic to it. It seems to make a lot of sense. I puzzled through a little this morning looking at the existing arson, trying to figure out why it wasn't, why it was thinking it was duplicative, and then I realized after reading them more closely that actually this does not appear to be covered. This situation does not. So I'm very sympathetic to this. My only question is going to be something you alluded to in your opening remarks, which is whether this really ought to be a Class C felony, or whether it should be more analogous to criminally negligent burning, which is a Class A misdemeanor.
Representative Stoltz.
And thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Holmes, we compared it to the other classes, and we thought it was analogous to the other arson offenses, and certainly had many of the inherent public safety risks. And certainly my hope that we're not going to be prosecuting a large number of people on this, and And I suspect, from conversation I have, it's going to be a penalty level that's going to result in more plea agreements for lesser crimes, especially with more youthful offenders. Is the feedback I've gotten from folks on the ground in the public safety and law agencies I've talked to.
Follow up? Not at the moment, thank you. Representative Samuels?
Thank you. I have a question, I guess, on who it's aimed at. Is this more aimed at people? I sympathize. I spend a lot of my summers parked at trailheads, aimed at somebody like me who might leave for the weekend and come back and have my car burned up? Or is it aimed, an example I gave to Ben, you hike up Twin Falls in Eklutna. I have no idea how they possibly got this car up there. I don't have a clue, but I mean, you're pretty, three or four switchbacks up, you turn down and there's a car in the weeds down there.
Yes.
Is it just who the kind of is aimed? Is you're aimed at me at a trailhead, or you're aimed at somebody burning that car up there? And
Mr. Chairman, Representative Samuels, it's aimed at the arsonist, and it's again, I agree with you. Some of the locations of vehicles that I've seen in my district have almost defied gravity.
Yeah. It's aimed more at a working vehicle that's damaged.
There are, I mean, I think you're getting at both points. There are people who, at least in the public use area in parts of the valley, who will intentionally take a beater vehicle out for the purpose intentionally burning it. So it would apply for your situation or that situation also.
Thank you.
Are there other questions for the bill sponsor?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Stoltz, I can't help but notice in these photographs that these cars, many of them seem to have been shot full of bullet holes. Is there already legal provision to prevent them from being shot full of bullet holes in the public use area?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Dugan, there are, through the regulatory process that we provide for within the public use area, the process is directed to designate safe shooting areas, and as far I don't believe there's a statute of regulations currently about shooting the vehicle. It's certainly a blight, and it's
as someone who's had to deal with a recalcitrant vehicle a time or two, I'm glad there's no statute against shooting them, Mr. Chairman. I was just curious. It seems to be that's as big a problem, at least according to the photographic evidence, is setting them on fire, and I was just wondering if they're going to do something about that, if they're doing something about that as well.
Through the chair, Representative Dugan, we had a preliminary regulation process where they did designate unsafe shooting areas and restrictions on shooting in certain locations within the public use area, and it's and we're going to have their management plan here shortly where they're going to designate safe shooting areas also, so we'll see how that all fleshes out.
So it's the sponsor's view then that part of it is being taken care of through the regulation process?
Mr. Chairman, as Representative Dugan, as much as you can try to second guess every irresponsible behavior, I guess that's so we're doing our best. Yeah. That we don't want that activity continuing.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
You're welcome, Representative Coghill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative, the fire and explosion, have you contemplated other damages? I mean, I think that. You get out a vehicle that could be taken out, stolen, and totally trashed, but not burned, would seem to me raised to the same level. I mean, you do have, if you could catch them, I guess you have the statute on taking a car, which is a C felony. If they totally trash the vehicle and damage it, it has, I think, practically the same effect as starting it on fire. So had you contemplated that?
Mr. Chairman, I haven't. My larger concern was the fire risk. I mean, as you know, through Alaska, that's been a prevalent activity, and it's again, I can't explain why certain behaviors exist, but they do, and it's where, and that has, this has been an area that of abuse that my community and folks from user groups from almost all the districts around Anchorage have, and certainly it's received more media attention than I can account for. The burning cars has been an issue folks have cried out for, and it's there's been almost a feeling of helplessness on how to address it. Working with public safety and law, that this has been the approach that through the committee, but like the deliberative process many of us take before even bring the issue to the light of day. This has yielded the product before the committee today.
Other questions? We have people that wish to testify. Lieutenant Dial is available to answer questions for the benefit of the committee. It doesn't appear that we have anybody from Department of Law here. Russ Maddox is with us from Seward. Mr. Maddox, are you with us?
Yes, I am. Thank you.
You'll introduce yourself and your affiliation.
Yeah, my name is Russ Maddox. I'm with Resurrection Bay Conservation Alliance here in Seward. And I just wanted to take this opportunity to go on the record in support of this bill. It's definitely not just an issue for the Mat-Su. Down here in Seward, it's been a problem for a number of years as well. There's lots of abandoned cars that wind up being burned and being shot up. And so an observation of mine is that it's not always the same people that are abandoning the cars as it is that are vandalizing the cars. But there are hundreds of them out in all the outlying areas here, anywhere you can go to drop off a car. And I also thought that the root of the problem is more car abandonment, and that we should somehow make it easier to dispose of these vehicles instead of just penalizing the end product of them being burned. And I know that the borough here, Kenai Peninsula Borough, has made a great effort to lower and reduce prices to have them disposed of, and somehow the behavior still occurs. But just an illustration of how big the problem is here, I was in front of a classroom of fifth graders yesterday here in Seward, and I asked them the question how many of them knew where there were abandoned cars, and every little hand in the classroom went up. So then I asked them how many of those abandoned cars had been shot and burned, and about half of the hands in the room went up. So once again, I wanted to reiterate that it is a statewide problem and that we support this, and thank you for your foresight.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Are there any questions? Russ, thank you. Thank you very much. Next, we'll go to Wynn Menifee with DNR. Wynn, are you with us?
This is Wynn Menifee with Division Mine, Land and Water, Department of Natural Resources, and I'm just available to answer questions if you have any about the nature, scope, and state lands.
Thank you. Are there questions?
Mr. Chairman,
Representative
maybe Holt? He can posit it, since he's on there and he's working today, he can posit an opinion on the bill for the record.
This is Wynn Menifee again. We do have the situation on state lands, and there is a considerable amount of abandoned vehicles, and besides that, we also have many that are shot and burned. And it comes at quite a cost to remove those. And statistically, you know, just the state itself has paid for about 50 vehicles removed. But then if you look at other state lands, like the Fairbanks North Star Borough, for instance, removed about 260 cars that were shot and burned on state land. In the Kinnick area, through private groups doing cleanup efforts, there's been hundreds of cars removed and disposed that are in that type of condition. So anything that we can do to help discourage that activity would be beneficial.
Thank you. Are there any additional questions for Mr. Menifee? Thank you for articulating the state's position. Next is Marty Quas.
Yes, I'm here.
Is that the correct pronunciation of your name, Marty?
Pardon me?
If you'd introduce yourself for the record, please.
Oh, okay. It's Arthur M. Quas. I go by Marty. The last name is spelled Q-U-A-A-S, and I would like to speak in favor of this House bill. I live on the south side of the Kinnick River. I look across the river at the public use area. I can see from below the Jim Creek, where it enters Knick River, and way above Wolf Point, probably about 4 or 5 miles of the river. And up until a couple of years ago, I called in on a very, very regular basis. I called the troopers, and the response that I always got from them was, well, we don't have a vehicle to get out there with, and there's not really too much we can do about it. And finally, I just gave up. This was also after my name was put on the radio a couple times on the trooper radio. And these people are also listening to the radio, because when the troopers do get something to get out there, all the lights disappear. And, I mean, at 2, 3 o'clock in the morning, to watch one of these fires burning, you just wonder how long it's going to be before it gets into the dry brush from last year and what have you. So anyway, I would like to say thank you for letting me speak, and I am in favor of this. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there questions for Marty? Mr. Quas, thank you very much for taking the time to weigh in through the public process today. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Next are Kenny and Patty Barber. Are you with us? Would you introduce yourselves, please?
My name is Kenny Barber.
Hi, Kenny.
I live in the Butte area, and I'd like to say that I support this bill. But I'd like to say one thing. I don't think it's all a Knick River problem. It's just like the man said there from Seward or wherever. It's a statewide problem, and I think that this bill would sure help in the long run at taking care of some of this problem. The other thing is that I'm one of them guys who hauled them cars off that river bar, and we took 32 cars out of there in one time. And since the public use area has been created, it's dropped a lot. I mean, you know, it has helped, and the troopers have been doing the best they can. And I realize that they're pretty much understaffed on a lot of things, but they've been working with their group pretty well, you know, to go out there and take care of the problem. So all I got to say is I support this bill.
Thank you. Are there questions for Mr. Barber?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Stoltz,
If I might, I just might embellish on Mr. Barber's pretty modest about what he's done. Even the 32 cars, he spends countless hours in doing bureaucratic work, checking up VIN numbers and working with the troopers who have been very helpful with him, and you know, finding homes outside of this area for these vehicles. He has put, it's almost a second full-time job for him, and he has been quite a good steward, not just a resident, but he's been a steward of this area.
Is that true, Mr. Barber?
yeah, I guess. I don't want to sound bad. Yeah, I spent a lot of time there.
Thank you. We all appreciate your work.
Thank you.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
I won't do that again.
There you go. I think my wife's on the other end here, so.
I understand.
I am. I would just, this is Patty Barber.
Yes, ma'am.
And I would like to support this bill, and I thank Representative Stoltz for putting this bill in. I think it's been something that we've needed for a long time. And that's pretty much all I have to say.
Thank you. I appreciate the testimony, and I think that the question that needs to be addressed is the one that Representative Holmes brought up, which is whether this appropriately rises to the level of a C felony. And I think we'll, as we wind through the individual testimony, we may go back to Lieutenant Dial and pose that question to him. I think that that's we've been having interesting conversations with the Department of Public Safety about the things that rise to the level of being a C felony. We have to be very careful. Because that changes people's lives forever.
Mr. Chairman, I wouldn't expect any more of a deliberative process. I certainly felt that this is a very good and thorough process you conduct here, and I will respect what it yields.
Thank you, Representative.
No, it gets the floor.
Thank you.
Just kidding. No, I'm just kidding. Just kidding.
Gregory Nelson is next. Mr. Nelson?
Yes, I am. Good afternoon. I am here. Good afternoon.
Yes, welcome. If you'd introduce yourself for the record, please.
Yes, good afternoon. My name is Gregory Nelson. I am co-founder of the Butte Area Residents Civic Organization.
Do you have a testimony you'd like to offer this afternoon?
We have. Good afternoon, Honorable Chairman Ramos and members of the House Judiciary Committee. BARCO is a group of residents who have come together to provide a point of contact for concerns with our, within our community, and we have provided means of getting these concerns resolved, partly in asking you for this kind of legislation, for one thing. Car burnings in our woods, along our trails, and near our homes has been one of these concerns for many, many years. Thank you for introducing House Bill 268, for having introduced this legislation to make the burnings of these vehicles on state and municipal lands a Class C felony. For over 25 years, we've been told by borough and state officials that they don't have the resources nor the tools to fight the epidemic of car burnings everywhere. These activities have been accelerating, endangering local firefighters, contaminating our woods and waterways, placing our homes and lives in danger, and condemning this great community and this beautiful area to a reputation that belittles and contradicts the values and standards which residents in normal communities can rightfully and peacefully enjoy. House Bill 268 passage will assure concerned residents and other users of public spaces that when they observe and report this particular criminal activity, they will be assisting the law enforcement community, which can then arrest and charge these offenders. We are curious, I am curious as to where the public use area has rounded a corner, because what we have seen in the last 4 years is a steady increase both in activity legal and illegal. As Representative Coghill said, it may not be enough to make this a felony for burning, but also for destruction or vandalism of a vehicle on these properties. And vehicle disposal has always been an issue, whether it's done by the National Guard, as it has been in the past, or by people dragging them out with their own vehicles. So thank you very much for this legislation. Thank you for taking our request for action forward, and we appreciate it very much. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Nelson. Chair Rammers had to step out for a moment. Next, we have signed up to testify is David Tyler. Are you with us, David?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes, and if you could please state your name and your affiliation, please.
My name is David Tyler. I'm the director of the Division of Fire and Life Safety with the Department of Public Safety. And I'd like to start by thanking Representative Stoltz for introducing this legislation. This is something that should have been done, I think, a long time ago. Burning vented vehicles or derelict vehicles is hazardous. It's dangerous. The first issue I'd like to address is firefighter safety. We all know what firefighters do is dangerous, and they do it every day. But normally not much thought is given to firefighting, you know, efforts towards vehicle fires because of what they do going into burning buildings is so, you know, it's normally so perilous. Vehicle firefighting presents many hazards most people don't know about. A good example would be the shock absorber bumpers that help reduce damage in low impact collisions. These things, when they get heated up, explode like grenades and can actually just take you out at the knees. Fuel tanks fail, spilling fuel on the ground, causing, you know, more hazard to the firefighters. And then you don't know what else is in the vehicle, what the owners may have had in the trunk, you know, other gas or other chemicals. See, just walking up to a burning vehicle to extinguish it is an extremely dangerous task. And the other concern that I have with burning these vehicles is the wildland fire issue. I mean, every year there, across the state, there are fires, wildland fires that are started by these vehicles. And, you know, luckily I haven't heard of any large ones that have, the large ones we've had across the state over the years. But they do, you know, give us cause for concern because it threatens our wildlife or our wildland areas as well as residents and the human life in those areas. And I think, you know, unless we get a handle on this, it's a matter of time until we do have a big fire as a result of this. And I agree, Butte isn't the only area that has the problem. I spent 25 years in the interior, and I'm sure Representatives Coghill and Rammers can attest to the fact that up along the Tanner River on the dike, all the pull-offs along Chino Hot Springs Road, these are all prime areas where these fires are occurring. And I strongly support this legislation. And again, I appreciate it being brought forward. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Fire Marshal, it's Jay Rammers. I'm back in the room. And we appreciate your testimony and Representative Stoltz and I appreciate your support not only on House Bill 268, but the other issues that we have brought to your attention. And we thank you for your testimony. Are there any questions for the State Fire Marshal? All right, seeing none, we thank you very much, and we appreciate your service to the state of Alaska.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Representative Stoltz, what is the penalty right now? Is it a misdemeanor, Class A, Class B? Do you know, Ben, do you know?
There, Chairman Ramirez, there is a, right now the bill would make it a Class C felony, but for burning a car intentionally, there is no penalty right now. There's no particular penalty. I guess you could go for criminal mischief if you want, which is a Class A misdemeanor, but that's their only recourse right now.
And, Mr. Chairman, we're putting this class of arson into arson of the third degree class, and that's a category, and the penalty for that happens to be the Class C felony. And we'd have to call it something else if you wanted to.
I asked Jane to put somebody from the Department of Law on the phone with us so that we can kind of talk about where it fits in. Representative Cockham?
Further down this title and section in 482, they have criminal mischief in the third degree, which brings a Class C felony for destruction of property worth $500 or more. And and there is intent to damage the property. So I suppose you could fall into that category, but this does make it very explicit that it's on public lands. And I think this other could fall out into whole range of other areas, and so and just a cursory reading, it looked to me like the criminal mischief section did raise to look like a C felony issue. So,
for a Class A misdemeanor, is that an offense for which you would be arrested, or an offense for which you would be issued a citation? Does anybody know? Lieutenant Dial, are you with us?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I am online.
Lieutenant Dial, I think you can gather that there's a broad support in the committee for House Bill 268, and that the issue that we're going to narrow ourselves around is what part of the statute that this should fall under. Would you first answer my question? For a Class A misdemeanor, is that grounds for a citation or for an arrest, or is that at the discretion of the law enforcement?
Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is Rodney Dial. I'm a lieutenant with Alaska State Troopers. For a Class A misdemeanor, if it is committed in the presence of the officer, it is a arrestable offense. The officer also does have the discretion for that. If the officer believes that it happened but did not witness the offense, then generally he'll complete the investigation and forward that to the district attorney's office for prosecution.
So what would, in this particular case, because it's a burning automobile, if an officer came upon a smoldering vehicle with people around it, but he didn't see the fire started, what would be the actions likely taken by law enforcement?
Mr. Chairman, first off, he'd probably try to ensure the safety of those folks and get them back, call the appropriate resources to deal with the fire. Then he would conduct an investigation to determine the owner of the vehicle and who started the fire. Criminal mischief would only apply if it was a vehicle of another person. Criminally negligent burning also only really deals with the vehicle of another person. So you do have that loophole, in a sense, where somebody can take their own vehicle out there and set it on fire. So that's kind of along the lines where the investigation would go.
Wait, say that last part over again.
Mr. Chairman, that's kind of the direction the investigation would go. You know, once the scene was secure, we try to determine who the owner of the vehicle was and who started the fire.
Mr. Chairman,
Representative Kaka,
it never occurred to me that I would start my own car on fire, or anybody else would, but I guess they do. So I'll yield on that one.
And Mr. Chairman, just I might the threshold of proof is, you know, intentionally, which is a pretty high standard. It's this like any other offense you prosecute. It's not going to make it easier for the. I don't think it's going to create an ease in arrest and prosecution, but it's. And I do just want to reiterate, I appreciate Fire Marshal Tyler articulating probably more graphically some of the public safety official concerns I had about the inherent risk. It's not the subjective or determinable value of the vehicle as much as the inherent risk of life safety, both through fire and through damage that he described. I think I just glossed over that aspect just a little too much, and I appreciate him punctuating that, and that's the real intent of this bill. It's not an aesthetic thing. It's a life safety and public safety issue. Aesthetics is secondary.
Very good. Representative Dugan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm puzzling about another part of this where it says, while that vehicle is located on state or municipal land, if it's basically setting a car on fire is a life safety issue on state or municipal land, wouldn't it be a life safety issue on any land? I mean, if we're going to essentially make this, we're talking either about abandoned cars, I believe, or a person's own car, that there's already provisions in the law. If I set fire to Representative Stoltz's car, I can be prosecuted for that. So the question is, in cases where it's a car that's been abandoned on private property, or if it's me driving my own car onto somebody's private property and setting it on fire, is there any provision in the law currently that would apply to those situations? And I don't know who I'm asking that question of, Mr. Chairman. But
Mr. Chairman, I think the trooper might be able to explore that. We approach state and municipal lands because those are where the offenses are occurring. I imagine there are some scenarios you could imagine where somebody would intentionally burn a car in their yard through some demonstration. I could see a fire department intentionally burning a car for a training exercise. We limited it to state and federal land really as a policy direction with the assistance from the folks that are enforcing it. Hopefully he can edify, and I'm following their direction as the folks that are out there trying to enforce these laws.
Okay.
It'd be Mr. Dial, I believe, right?
It's through the chair, Representative Dugan. This is Lieutenant Dial again. Currently, we do not investigate an individual destroying property on their own property. Generally, that a lot of times it won't even result in a call to the troopers or to the fire services to respond. There just really isn't the same level of interest that many people have in an individual who's destroying property on their own property, as long as, you know, that is somewhat contained. So we're just really not experiencing that quality of life issue from people in remote Alaska that are telling us that that's a concern.
Okay, that was going to be my question, Mr. Chairman. It's not so on Native Corporation land or other private land, you're not, you know, federal land, you're not running into those kinds of problems. Is that right, Lieutenant?
Through the chair, Representative Dugan, that is correct. We're just really not experiencing a great number of calls from people saying, you know, my neighbor is burning a car on his own property. I can't think of one personally, and I've worked in many remote locations.
Thank you, Lieutenant Dial. Jerry Lockup is on his way over here from across the street to help us with the where in the statute this would be appropriate and what the criminal penalty with the criminal
penalty. Appropriate other than where we're suggesting it?
I caught myself halfway through that thing. Thanks for the help. All right, are there other questions for Lieutenant Dial? All right, with that, we'll go off the record for a couple of minutes until Jerry Lockup is here. 2 p.m. Mr. Luckup is in the back of the room. Jerry, would you come up, sit next to Representative Stoltz, please? Jerry, if you'll introduce yourself for the record.
For the record, my name is Jerry Luckup, Legislative Counsel for the Division of Legal Services.
As always, it's a pleasure to have you here with us. There is broad support from the public and from members of this committee for House Bill 268. The question that we have is, Representative Holmes brought this up, and some of the other members have echoed this concern of whether this should rise to arson in the third degree, which is a C felony, or what is most appropriate. We thought perhaps you could weigh in for the benefit and clarity of the committee.
Mr. Chairman, I think are you asking him to describe the elements and the penalties for each so that the committee can make the policy decision?
That's sort of, through the chair, that was sort of my hesitation there. I don't really care either way what the committee decides to do. I'll make it work. But the way it was presented to me that they wanted it to be a lesser form of arson, and so that would militate it being a Class C felony. If we were going to go to something like equating it to criminally negligent burning, then that could be possible too. The differences in the penalties between a Class C felony and a Class A misdemeanor is Class A misdemeanor is up to 1 year in jail, and the fine, I believe, is $5,000. And a Class C felony is a sentence up to 5 years in jail, and the fine is, I think, $10,000. For a first offender on a Class C felony, it would only serve, I think the range is 0 to 2. So most people get, at max, a 1 year sentence, max. Usually something less than that.
Thank you. That was perfect. That's exactly what we're looking for.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Stoltz.
And so we established, you know, as far as on the policy, Mr. Luckup doesn't care. And I just wanted just maybe to reiterate and just to have the Department of Public Safety maybe just weigh in on whether or not they do care and why they've worked with us and supported the Class C felony. They may care. And they may have some elaboration on that.
Lieutenant Dial?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, this is Lieutenant Dial once again. I guess I would just comment that the criminal statutes regarding criminally negligent burning right now, which are a Class A misdemeanor, don't seem to be discouraging this type of activity. And I guess I would add that we currently charge people with a felony offense if they were to damage property of another in an amount greater than $500. And I think we could certainly make the argument that disposal of these vehicles and or even just putting out the fire far exceeds the cost to the public in excess of $500. So pretty much in that regard, we feel that a felony charge is appropriate in this case.
Thank you. Mr. Luckup.
Mr. Chairman, to add to that, if there was a reason why I would recommend one over the other is that we already have criminally negligent burning in statute with that requires a lesser mental state than what you're requiring for this crime. Criminally negligence burning is that you, with criminal negligence, which is our second lowest mental state, you damage property of another by fire or explosion. This requires someone to intentionally damage a motor vehicle. It could be their own or somebody else's by fire or causing an explosion while that vehicle is located on municipal land. Most cases would be subsumed, most cases of this occurring, if it wasn't, it would be subsumed by the criminally negligent burning statute. And so you wouldn't need this offense, and it wouldn't be used because it required additional proof, except in the case where someone is burning their own car. So you would be creating this as a narrow exception. That's my fire department pager going off, speaking of arson and everything.
You have to go
right now. It's especially appropriate, I think, at this time period. But so we only be creating this Class A misdemeanor for a very narrow range of offenses when someone intentionally damages their own car.
Thank you, Representative Holmes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, then that actually does give me heartburn because if I understand you correctly, you're saying that for cases in which somebody burns somebody else's car, it's going to be easier for the prosecutor to prove criminal negligence rather than intention. So they're going to charge you with a lesser felony. You would get a lesser penalty for burning somebody else's property, whereas if it's your own car, they only have a choice to go for the higher penalty. So you're going to have a higher penalty for burning your own car than for burning somebody else's car. That, to me, Mr. Chairman, seems a little bit backwards.
Mr. Luckup.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Holmes. if we created a Class C felony, it would apply to people burning their own car and other people's car with this higher mental state, which is traditionally how we create things in statute. We usually adjust the damage that is caused or the harm that is caused along with the mental states and increase the penalties based upon that. So with this increased mental state, if you damaged your own car or someone else's on state or municipal land, then it would be a Class C felony. And the state would have this additional burden of proving that you did it intentionally, which is our hardest mental state to prove. Whereas currently, you can convict someone of criminally negligent homicide. I mean, criminally negligent burning, I mean, criminally. I usually don't mention the statute very often. I usually talk in terms of criminally negligent homicide. Criminally negligent burning that applies with this criminal negligence mental state, which is very low, and the person damages property of another by fire or explosion. So this would fit in a nice progression as the legislature, as the legislature has defined things and moving up. And with these additional mental states, it would provide additional protection. Again, that's a decision for you, but if you were to drop this to a Class A misdemeanor, people wouldn't use this because it requires you to prove so much extra. Except the only time they would be able to use it is if you tried to burn your own car.
Representative Holmes?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Another suggestion here is to drop the mental state and drop the penalty and have it be a Class A misdemeanor, but only require criminal negligence. And then it would sort of go hand in hand with the criminally negligent burning statute. Same mental state, which is easier to prove than the one that is in the language in front of us, but with a Class A misdemeanor.
Mr. Chairman, it seems like we pretty much negotiate for something we already have, and I probably save a lot of time in that this bill. I can tell the people back home, I came home empty-handed, but I think as Mr. Luckup is explaining the statutes has really articulated very well, I hope this isn't often used application. But it has the deterrent effect, and I think in the progression with the higher mental state required, intentionally is a much harder mental state to prove. We already have the aforementioned penalty and mental state. That's,
okay.
I want to have some progress on this issue because it is a serious issue, not to my district alone, but to many other areas as we refer to the testimony.
All right, very good. Are there any other questions for Lieutenant Dial? Representative Holmes?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Changing tax off of mental states and levels and on to something else. A couple of questions that occurred to me during our at ease. One is, if you've got one of these cars, it's on state or municipal land, you begin burning the car, you set the fire, and it becomes a forest fire, which is clearly a danger and something that we're trying to avoid here. Are you then on the hook legally for other, are you on the hook for damages already for the forest fire? Are you on the hook for any other crime?
That's
for Lieutenant Dial, I believe, or anybody else who happens to know the answer.
Through the chair, Representative Holmes, that's possible. I mean, you could have crimes such as failure to control or report a dangerous fire. Those tend to be somewhat low-level crimes. That would be a Class A misdemeanor, for example. That would be a case-by-case basis. We would have to really run that by the district attorney's office to see what would be appropriate, and I imagine that would depend a lot upon if other people were injured because of the fire.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I had a totally separate question. Also.
As many as you want to fire off.
Looking at the language here, and I'm asking all these questions here in the vein of I don't know the answer, and I don't really care what the answer is one way or another. I just want to know. Do we need an exception in here? Would there be any reason why either public safety or firefighters might intentionally set something on fire on public or municipal land as a training exercise? And if so, would there need to be any kind of exception, or is that already exempted under the law somehow?
Mr. Tyler, Mr. Chairman.
Chairman, probably be an excellent source for the answer.
Thank you for the assistance, Representative Stoltz.
I
feel like we're playing cribbage.
Five.
State Fire Marshal Tyler, are you still on the line, or did you leave us? I think he left us. All right. Mr. Lockup, do you have a point of view on Representative Holmes?
Chairman, we have a statute dealing with starting a fire and allowing it to escape. And it's in Title 41, and it's been around since statehood. And it creates a misdemeanor penalty for if you know of a fire or if you start a fire and it then escapes and you don't do everything it can to put it out and everything, that's a crime. And that's a misdemeanor punishable by a fine of not less than $25 nor more than $500 or by imprisonment in jail for not less than 10 days nor more than 6 months. So it's something between a Class B and a Class A misdemeanor.
Okay.
It's one of these old ones. We also have, you also can recover double damages in civil actions. People can recover double damages in civil action against that person. The federal government, since they usually undertake a big part of the wildfire cost, is usually somewhat aggressive in trying to recover cost, but they never recover the total cost for most wildland fires. I'm speaking from experience of dealing with those fires for years. It doesn't usually happen too often. They recover much.
Can't get blood out of a turnip.
Thank you, Jerry. Are there any other questions for Lieutenant Dial? Is there any other public testimony? Is there anybody online or in the room that would like to speak on this matter? Okay. Public testimony is closed. Are there any questions for the bill sponsor, Mr. Luckup? Mr. Luckup?
Mr. Chairman, there's also another criminal penalty for a setting a fire maliciously and wantonly, these words that we don't use too often. If you set on fire timber, brush, grass, or other inflammable material located or growing on land, and it has to be land that is not owned or developed or possessed or controlled by anybody. And then there's a penalty of not less than 1 year in jail, no more than 10 years, and a fine associated with that. So there's another potential penalty out there for wantonly and maliciously setting not the car on fire, but if you set the grass and trees and things, and so it could have some play in this.
All right, very good. Bill sponsor has made his wishes clear, which is to maintain the third degree arson penalty, which is punishable by a C felony. Are there questions for the bill sponsor? All right, seeing that, was bring it back to the committee. What are the wishes of the committee? Representative Dahlstrom?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wish to move House Bill number 268, version A, with attached fiscal notes and individual recommendations.
Okay, without objection, House Bill 268 moves from committee. Representative Stoltz, thank you for your patience in this matter. And
thank you for the thoroughness, which will help me better prepare for the floor, as all bills that have this type of scrutiny. I really appreciate that.
Representative Stoltz, my own feeling is that any time that we're talking about a C felony and inflicting a felony on something that some young people might regard as frivolous, foolish behavior, we should stop and take it seriously, because C felonies change people's lives. And so that's a threshold that I take very seriously. Once we're already into a felony statute, you know, an aggravator or some other element, it is equally serious. But taking that going through that threshold from a misdemeanor offense to a felony offense is a significant undertaking. That's my own opinion. We thank you very much for bringing this bill forward, and also for citing the good works of Mr. Barber. That was particularly appreciated. Thank you, Representative Stoltz. All right. With that, Representative Newman is with us for House Bill 303. House Bill 303, Representative Newman, if you want to come up. House Bill 303 was heard in Labor and Commerce and then given a subsequent referral to the House Judiciary Committee. Since then, at the just this afternoon, I think without the benefit of the sponsor seeing the opinion, the Department of Law issued an opinion on 303, and the sponsor has expressed to have some time to respond to this, but I wanted to invite Representative Newman down just to offer a brief introduction of the matter so that everything looked quite appropriate and that we're proceeding in an orderly fashion on House Bill 303. So with that, Representative Newman, whatever remarks you would care to offer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and nothing would make Representative Mark Newman, House District 15, for the record. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Nothing would have made me happier than as if this would have been an appropriate, timely fashion of the way things happened here. But as to this moment right now, although there was a document released by the Department of Law concerning House Bill 303, there is still not one been delivered to my office. I still do not have one in my office, although many other people, including lobbyists who oppose this, have a copy. I still don't. Mr. Chair, I will just ask that maybe if we could bring this up on Friday. I would like to address these issues so that we can fully have a good conversation on this on Friday. Again, my staff, my office has been in contact with Mr. Sniffen since before this went to Labor and Commerce.
Representative Newman, we are committed for Friday, so we can take this up on Monday. We'd be happy
Monday.
To take this up on Monday.
It's fine.
All right, and we have people in the room scheduled to testify as well, people online. Is it your wish to hear testimony today, or would you prefer to defer the matter until you as the bill sponsor have a better opportunity to articulate the bill before us?
Mr. Chair, thank you for that ability to be able to comment on that. If we could defer, that would certainly be better because there may be changes that are made, and any comments that are made today may not be germane to the topic.
Okay. We are delighted to extend that courtesy to Representative Newman as the bill sponsor. And so with that, at 2:20 in the afternoon, we thank the people that had signed up to testify for House Bill 303. But in deference to the bill sponsor, we will hold this over until Monday, which is the next available time that we have to hear this. And we thank you. And at that, we are adjourned at 2:20.